Hello, this is Edward Tatnall Canby. I'm back with another half hour of music and commentary concerning things of interest on tape and records. And as always, my comment will be illustrated for you directly by the music itself from the actual recordings.
Now let's play another little tune I wrote for this Christmas of 1967. It's called Christmas Time. Anne and I will sing it together.
Had you ever thought, in these days of such easy technology, of making your own private records? I mean real records, pressed records. You personally, or your club, or your organization of some sort? Even more tricky, did you ever think of sending a record as your annual greeting card? Listen to this charming one.
Christmas time, happy time, singing, dancing, Christmas time, sing today, sing and play, sing because your heart is gay. Christmas time, dancing time, singing, happy Christmas time, dance today, dance away, dance to the Christmas holiday.
Christmas.
How's that for a good idea? It's a little 7-inch record, 33 speed, not 45, like a small LP, and the big central label on the record is a fanciful drawing, a Christmas card drawing, by the man who concocted the whole idea. He's a composer, as you can hear. He doesn't write his music down, but he still is a composer. He makes up these charming little German dance effects for the tootling instruments. But there's more to it than that on this Christmas card. As I say, this is the age of technology, and this man not only composes the music, but he plays it and records it. All of it. How? Why, simple. Via the same kind of tape trickery, overdubbing, sound on sound, as it's often called today, which this program once demonstrated to some of you very old listeners many years ago, when the idea was then brand new, back in the early 1950s. And it's the same technique in miniature by which now the celebrated music of the Beatles and the Beach Boys and other such groups is also put together in the laboratory, so to speak, one sound created after another and then the whole put together. This man played all the parts there, and he banged all the drums, and he hammered on all the wine glasses and what have you in the music. He adds each part onto the accumulating whole as he makes it. Sometimes he does tricks like doubling the speed of one part, and thereby puts the part up one octave in pitch, and it makes him sound like quite a virtuoso player, which he says he definitely is not. You play a piece or a part, for instance, quite slowly on an alto recorder, then you double the tape speed, and it comes out fast on a soprano recorder. Take that to heart, you recorder players. Here's the way this little Christmas card on a record begins, a different composite assembled piece of music.
Listen. This is Dick Field. You've just heard the Gnomes marching onto the scene for our Christmas record. My daughter Anne and I hope you have a very Merry Christmas.
Then after the daughters...
Merry Christmas.
The Gnomes march their way out again to the same tune that they marched in on. And so away they go until another Christmas comes around. It's a very nice idea, isn't it? And quite practical. There are countless variations on this Christmas card idea that are possible if only you do own your own fairly good tape recorder of reasonably good quality. That's all you really need. It's surprisingly cheap, too, to have such a record printed privately. As I remember, it didn't cost Mr. Field much over a dollar or so a copy for a reasonable number of records, including the works, including the printed label on the record itself. Cute labels, by the way. On the back of his record is a label on which is written in his own reproduced handwriting, this, "To explain, these tunes were composed by Richard S. Field, Jr., and played one part at a time on tape. The process known as sound-on-sound recording was first made popular some years ago by Les Paul and Mary Ford, and I might add, by Edward Canby many years ago. Instruments used here on this record are piano, recorder, wooden flute, drum, and wine glasses. That's all. You'll find that a good many places will be happy to take your private order for such a record, and the only real hitch you'll run into is simply that of the economics of mass production, because records, you see, are geared to mass production. That's the whole idea. The main cost is the original master that must be made for each side for the pressing. This record only has one side, which must have saved Mr. Field quite a sum. And the individual records must be pressed in really large numbers to be economical. Actually, for the lowest unit cost, you'd have to press the maximum, perhaps some thousands. The price goes down as the number of copies goes up, of course. But you'll find that perhaps 100 copies is the minimum that you can buy of any pressing, privately made. I don't intend to give you facts and figures on private pressing today. Rather, what I'm interested in simply is the idea here and some samples that I've assembled for your pleasure and your ears. Here's another greeting card, for instance, that I got through the mail, and I think you will know this sender very well, Tony Schwartz. As some of you know, Tony Schwartz is a super pro at making his own recordings, portable recordings. And a greeting card in record form from him is bound to be something very special. This Tony Schwartz card, for instance, is partly an interview with some children, very small children, on the subject of all things of God and heaven, definitions. Now, who but Tony Schwartz would think of such an idea for a tape recording? And who but he could ever get it down onto tape in such a persuasive form as this? Listen.
God is somebody who rules the world. He's sort of like a spirit, I guess, up in outer space.
He kind of started all the plants growing, and he started people. Well, I guess he's kind of big and fat.
He can see us wherever we do. Whatever we do, he has such powerful eyes. He doesn't have millions and thousands and billions. And he can still see us when we're bad.
He could be sitting on the table right now, but you can't see him.
If he was a bad man, he'd make everything bad. He wouldn't have electricity. He wouldn't make people. And
that's a nice thing.
What would happen if God was nice?
He's not what a lot of people think is just a feeling, but I think he's a real person.
Well, I think that God isn't a person, but he's up in the heavens and he's watching over us right now.
God is everywhere, and I don't know how he could do it.
He can't be everywhere, once doing everything for everybody. Everybody can't get what they want.
God, I guess, he's just a person that makes me believe in him. Well, he feels like he's next to me, right next to me.
God is a person that rules us, and he tells us what's good and he tells us what's bad, and he's our conscience.
To me, I think of him as someone who makes flowers and green grass and the blue sky.
Well, his job is to make us good and make us happy, make us parents good. And my grandma and grandpa, when they come and buy us presents, buy nice ones.
Once I was hurt, so he gave me the courage to fight this boy that was hurting me.
God is a person who takes care of dead people when they go up to heaven, and he tries to make our wishes come true and everything.
I think he helps Mother Nature.
Good is the right thing, and bad is the wrong thing.
If you're good, you don't get caught in jail or anything.
God can tell if you're lying because on your face it sort of looks like you're lying.
Well, one thing that I know is if you're good, you go up to heaven. If you're bad, you go down to the devil. And when you go to the devil, you don't go up, you go down.
When I'm good, my mother never yells at me. When I'm bad, she does.
Good means to obey your mother and father, do what the teacher says, the thing's right. I feel miserable when I'm bad. I feel miserable inside, but on the outside, I just feel like I feel now.
I think that there are more people that are bad than there are good. And if you're good, you'll live forever, and if you're bad, you'll die when you die.
I think that there's a little piece of him in every single person. Even if a person looks all bad, you know that there's at least a little bit of good in him.
I promised him that I'd be good in school, but something in my mind keep on buzzing around my head. I keep on getting better and better.
I don't know what heaven is. They say it's in the sky, farther than space.
Heaven is some place where people die and they go up there. It's not fancy or nothing. It's plain.
You don't come alive at heaven. You get wings, I think. And when you get the wings, you can fly all around. And Eugene says that if you wish something like that, it's in front of you. You know, like if you wish I had a black star like that, it's in front of you.
It's above the clouds and under the universe. It's just above the clouds.
It's like down here, except I guess it's more fun up there than down here.
I had a dream once that I was in heaven, and they had little children had beanies on with propellers.
I don't know. I guess I will go to heaven. I'm just taking a guess. I don't know for sure. You go up in heaven when you die, so you don't have to pay taxes or anything. I'm positive. I say different prayers every night. Well, when my uncle died, I said, please, God, take good care of my uncle up there in heaven. Amen. That's what I said last night. I don't know what I'm going to say tonight.
Like in school, if I think that I'm going to get a bad mark on my exam, you know, and Mommy and Daddy will get mad at me, so I close my hands and I start praying to God that Mommy and Daddy won't get mad at me.
I ask him sometimes to help me be a better boy and to forgive all my sins, the lies I tell, and things I do bad.
I pray before I go to bed, and sometimes before I eat. Sometimes, of course, in church. Well, one thing, you have to kneel down, stand up, sit down, kneel down, stand up, and gets you tired.
Mostly before I get a beating, I always say a prayer. God, please make my burdens light. Please put something into my mother's head that would make her forget about the beating.
Who but Tony Schwartz would think of getting down such delightful sentiments as that for his audible greeting card? I'm rather flattered to be on his mailing list, to tell the truth, and I hope that he'll forgive me for making him public, so to speak. This was a private Christmas card sent out some years ago. Of course, the more normal form of privately pressed recording is the larger-sized LP record, the 12-inch size, the only problem being what to fill it up with. There's an awful lot of time to be filled up. Therefore, you won't find many personal recordings of that size privately pressed, but large numbers of groups, especially groups that make sounds together, do put out their own special LP records. It's very easy to do these days, and often it's done, so to speak, semi-commercially, that is, for sale to their own friends or members. Over the years, I've picked up through the mail a considerable number of glee club and choir and chorus private recordings of this sort, pressed just for the membership and friends. For instance, here, way back, is the Mendelssohn Glee Club of Plainfield, New Jersey, one of the very earliest examples of this type, a record made in the season of 1951-52 when the LP record was practically brand new. The label firmly states it was pressed but not recorded by Columbia Records. That's how they got it done. The Mendelssohn Glee Club. It was the real old-fashioned McCoy third, all right. Listen.
I got a key to the kingdom. I got a key. Oh, yes, I have it now. I got a key to the kingdom, and the world can't do me no harm. Singing, I got a key to the kingdom. I got a key. Oh, yes, I have it now. I got a key to the kingdom, and the world can't do me no harm. Oh, if you know your living right, serving God both night and day. And when you go down on your knees, God will hear every word you say. Singing, I got a key to the kingdom. I got a key. Oh, yes, I have it now. I got a key to the kingdom, and the world can't do me no harm. Singing, I got a key to the kingdom. I got a key. Oh, yes, I have it now. I got a key to the kingdom, and the world can't do me no harm.
Somehow they can't seem to keep away from Christmas ideas, these private pressings. The last number on the Mendelssohn Glee Club record brings in what seem to be the wives and children of the singing members. At least they don't appear anywhere else on the record. The rest of them are all men. A happy new year to you folks, too, in season or out. The LP record, after all, is playable the year around. Sometimes these privately made records cross the rather indefinite technical border into what amounts to commercial production, or even what we could call actual commercial production, though often the music appears on a label that is relatively small in scope. And the pleasant thing is that such very small labels often do make many musical events possible on records that would be unlikely on any major record label. Here's a disc on the Chessman label in New York City, that's C-H-E-S-S-M-A-N, a group of young people called the Zamir Choral, Z-A-M-I-R, who sing entirely in Hebrew, an interesting mixture of different kinds of music. This one is full-fledged stereo and a thoroughly professional recording. Not all the music that is sung by this group is originally set to Hebrew texts. Here's an interesting experiment, for instance. A Bach chorale sung with Hebrew words. the Zamir Chorale, Z-A-M-I-R, on the Chessman label in New York City, a local small label. One of the most delightfully funny privately pressed recordings of this general sort came in to me early in 1968, again in full stereo. It can be bought, this one, but definitely it is a private pressing. The way you can be sure, by the way, is simply to look at the label on the LP record. If the name of the organization that performs on the record heads the label, then it's definitely a limited edition, private type pressing, even if it does happen to be for sale. If there is a label above that, sometimes that means it's more of a commercial record. This one's label says simply, The Little German Band, and that's just what plays here, a small German band. This band got itself enough reputation with German music to be featured at an enormous German beer party celebrating the traditional autumn German festival, the Oktoberfest. And what a beer party! Never heard anything like it. The record covers most of the party, from its relatively quiet beginnings straight through until there wasn't any more beer. And such a joyous noise you never heard, really most of music. Here's the opening cut on the Little German Band record of this astonishing event, the Oktoberfest celebration. The people have started, they're drinking of beer, they're all assembled, and the band marches in and takes its place near the private recording microphones. The recording is very cleverly put together. It's edited, of course, just excerpts from the total length of the party. But instead of fading out the unavoidable background of people noise, these sounds are left running right on between each LP band, so that in no time at all you find yourself almost there at the scene, and you can practically taste the beer. Very intelligent use of the recorded medium, not trying to dodge the extraneous noise, but using it as part of the total effect. Very clever. And so much for the Little German Band, and guess where it plays? In Maryland. And guess where it comes from? State College, Pennsylvania. Pure American. The name of the album, therefore, is Oktoberfest USA, played by the Little German Band. So until next week, this is Edward Tatnall Canby saying goodbye.